Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk More Movies, show where I try and talk about movies, but never talk about anything and everything else. I'm your host, Michael Breslin. To my left is...
John Cole.
To my right...
Colin Hearn.
I don't hear a raspy throat there during the... I don't want to fuck it up, though.
It feels like fucking years since I've been in my beloved tent. It actually does. It's weird because...
It's been like a month for you.
But it's kind of crazy because we usually do episode every week. And you just kind of get used to being on here and having fun with your pals, and that actually it's a lovely feeling to be back.
That's what I thought, but then you kept ducking me, the two of you.
Not ducking, you were working. You were on fucking holidays for a week.
Aye, but he's had all the...
Oh, swan on yourself, them continental holidays.
He's had all the stuff they do well with me.
I've been fucking working like a dog down in the putts in Ramelton. You've been off sun yourself, and this man here's been, well, fuck knows what he's been doing. Well, no, for us, no, he went back to fucking university, so we've all been busy as fuck. You know what I mean?
I was uni, and then I had like a debilitating migraine last Friday.
And that's why we couldn't do it. So apologies, folks, if there's been no podcast goodness for a while.
Didn't he get migraines? I get one where I fucking lose sight in my eye.
I've never had
Jill gets that, like... It's nearly like she gets tunnel vision. Yep. Like everything goes blurry around eye. Because she asked the optician about it one time, and they said it's called a visual aura. Which sounds quite nice.
Have I just made this up, or is tunnel vision a song? Tunnel vision, tunnel
chuckle
vision.
Chuckle vision.
Chuckle vision.
You're a fucking idiot. Hey, did you see that thing? They might be the new host of the Great British Bake Off.
Fuck off. I watch
it. You know Mel and Sue's
out. I'm going back. But why, like, definitely. Why are Mel and Sue refusing? I know this is fucking completely unrelated to film, but why are Mel and Sue refusing to go to Channel 4? Is it just like a loyalty thing to the BBC?
No, it's like, well, I want to preface this, but I haven't read anything about this.
So it's definitely going to be bollocks.
It's definitely going to be bollocks.
My preface is, I don't give a fuck.
But, no, I thought it was like contract disputes, like they want more money and they're not prepared to pay them.
Well, I mean, like Channel 4 is right after shelling out about 12 million, just they buy the fucking thing?
25
so
million.
25 million? It so was, certainly...
No, because BBC were paying 12 million for it, and they doubled that shit.
Great show, like.
But it's the biggest show on BBC. And it's just, I've always said, don't get me wrong, it's not the best show I ever watch. It's a very simple fucking format and whatever else, it's just easy viewing.
But for the amount of people that watch it on BBC now, even if they have a bit of a drop-off going over to Channel 4, it'll be Channel 4's biggest show.
Yeah.
Because Gogglebox is their biggest show at the minute, and Great British Bake Off gets like double the amount that Gogglebox does. Like.
It's fucking mental.
So it's a big step for Channel 4.
That's why it was a huge coup for Channel 4. But
Mary's fucked off as well now. Yeah,
it's only Paul Hollywood that's fucking staying on.
You know he would stay on Paul's the fucking creep.
he's fucking checking out them Channel 4 interns just as he's over. But it's strange. And we will begin to discuss films on a minute. We're just obviously the biggest news that's came in the past 3 weeks is the fact that Great British Bake Off is in Channel 4.
You get the inside line on Paul Hollywood.
But
sure, he was banging the bird on the American one.
He's been doing the fucking dog on his wife for years.
Aye, because he went over and did the American Bake Off. I don't know what they actually called it. Just
Great American Bake Off, probably
something like that.
Great American.
There's a Great Irish Bake Off.
Is
there's an Irish one too?
Is that any good?
Actually, no, it's not called the Great Irish. It's just called the Irish Bake Off. Is it? No, I don't know.
Well, because they probably only called the Great British Bake Off because it's Great Britain.
No, it actually... Oh, fuck. You know what? It doesn't matter. That actually does not matter.
It probably doesn't matter, but I want to know.
Yeah, anyway, you know what? We've moved on. We've covered the hot topic of Bake Off. What else can we move on to?
I see. It's been years since we've done this. It's Danger Bottle. Every week we get a strange alcohol and we drink it and normally forget they talk about it and then we just talk about something else. But yeah, as we mentioned, I was away sunning myself in sunny Spain. Which
España?
See,
that's the extent of my Spanish.
Which leg were your balls sticking to?
They split up and went to either side.
There you go.
Free and easy then.
Too bad.
Convoy.
No, because they
each had their own turf, like.
No, because this holiday was actually a big step for me because it was the first time I've ever been in Spain, but
was it, Mickey?
But I vowed to myself in fourth year Spanish class that I was never going to go to Spain because I hated
Spanish or wankers
because I hated Spanish class so much. And this holiday was gifted to me and Jill from her ma and her sister. It was a Christmas present.
How y'all are half loving.
And so we got this present at Christmas, and I turned around to Jill. I was like, I can't go. I vowed never to go to Spain.
I made a commitment to my younger self when I was 14.
It's like, I always say, my word is oak. If I break this.
Where does it fucking end?
Exactly. So she told me to wise up. And I kept reminding her, you know, this is me taking a big step here for you. Like, I mean, I vowed never to go to Spain.
Maybe that's why she was so nice to you all week.
Probably.
Probably. Even though she should be nice to you anyway, because
would you get fucking snap?
She should be nice to you anyway because she's your fiance. Like, yeah. You know what I mean?
Well,
tell the story of how she was.
Shoulda, woulda, coulda.
Tell the story of how she was extra special. Nice. See, that sounds actually very creepy. But tell the story that you were telling us just before we started recording this thing.
All right. Well, on our last day in Spain, our last night, we had a bit of vodka left from, like, we just bought some bottles of vodka when
definitely
we got there, you know, just well, just drinking through it a bit.
A bottle of vodka, like, it means 2 10 glasses. Like,
it was a 10 glass.
Yes.
But Jill said as a joke, "Oh, we need to drink all this drink tonight," and I was like, "Oh, okay then." So I made the effort to try and drink an entire 10 glass in about 2 hours.
Jesus,
I didn't.
You didn't tell us that the first time. A 10 glass in 2 hours?
No, I didn't. That's what I'm saying. No,
but you did.
No, well, when I say 2 hours, that's a made up time. But anyway. No, I just drank a lot basically on our last night. So the next day, like, we had a checkout and stuff, and I was hanging out my hole, and we were just sat in this park bench, and I turned around to Jill, and I was like, "I'm either going to shit myself or vomit, but someone's coming out of me." And so I went to a public bathroom and I vomited and shit.
At the same time, I've seen that happen. It's quite impressive what a man can do.
No, it was the smell of the shit managed to bring the vomit up.
A vite.
A
vomite.
Wait for a bite. Poking a shit.
But anyway, I returned to Jill, who was just left sitting on a park bench. And I thought she would be a bit fucked off of me. Because
2 seconds. Me and Heron are...
No, like, it's all, I'm waiting for a bite. Oh, you get a sandwich? No, a book or a shit.
It's so weird, too, because you're that cool, calm, and collected, and that laid back, that I can punch you, like... Not in control whatsoever, especially when there's broken shit flying out. I'm proud that tears fucking blind you too. I just can't picture that situation, like, and I'm only a fucking spar in the middle of Spain or something.
No, it was like, it was near the beach, so they have like just toilets on.
I should just dunk the sea, man.
Broken into the sea, just dunking my head under.
Just shit in the sea, just broken on some random Spanish wine. Oh, right.
Just fucking two-tone going east to west.
Just fucking coming out of the water like fucking Cthulhu. Fucking in China, the fucking the creature from the Blue Lagoon.
Right, anyway, I returned to Jill and I thought she might be a bit fucked off because, you know, it's her last day in Spain and basically I can't do anything now because I'm hanging out in the hole. But she just took care of me. She was all, "What do you need?" And I was like, "Ice cream." And so she went and got some ice cream and stuff. Ooh. And it was just a nice sweet day overall.
And did you have a lovely holiday at the end of it?
I know, it was very nice. It was the first kind of like sunny holiday where it's basically just like you go and do fuck all kind of thing. Like you don't really go sightseeing or anything.
It's nice because I mean,
you just chill.
Sandy won a usance recently that. I mean, like, don't get me wrong, I love the old time of sun holiday where you just go and do fuck all, but I'm kind of more on the city breaks and going about and, you know...
City breaks,
baby! But, you know, going about and seeing stuff and stuff
city
like
guy.
That.
City guy. He's a city guy. Remember I chose City Guys?
Fucking unbelievable. But what do you call it? The only thing about city breaks is that, if you go on a city break for, like, a long weekend or something like that, because you're walking about so much, you come back from a holiday feeling exhausted, you know what I mean? Because you've constantly been on the move and you're not really relaxing, which is...
I see, because I think I'm bad at taking holidays, because that's what I don't really like about holidays. Like, when you're on holiday, there's the expectation, because you spend so much money or whatever, that you have to go see where you are, and you have to go do touristy things, you have to go out and do stuff, but then you're always fucking knackered, like, and it's just like, I would just be happy and just sit and chill, like, just go to a bar, or just
and, I mean,
sit away.
There's one end of it, again, we will go back to films, but...
Well,
there's
we're supposed to be on Danger, by the way.
Right, no. There's one end it that you do want to go out and explore, you know, where you are and stuff like that, but then the other side of it is that certainly the main aim of holidays, they fucking relax and just chill out.
I don't know.
What's going on here?
I was looking for the Wi-Fi.
Oh. But yeah, no, I was just saying that certainly the main aim of holidays, they relax. Yeah. But... What is the danger bottle, Michael? Reveal it.
The danger bottle is, I was in Spain, and if you've ever been to Spain, you know that a big thing is they do a lot of miniatures.
Yeah.
A lot of miniature alcohols. Mm-hmm. And I found a place where they did each one for €1.30.
Oh, quads on.
Pretty darn good. And they had loads of them as well, so it was like a fucking pick a mix. So
yes.
I got 20 of them.
Oh, fuck, here I go.
So I was thinking for the next few weeks, we'll just do a wee lucky dip out of the bag.
I like that as well. Like he was in Spain, not thinking about his holiday. How can I sauce Danger Ball, get that tied down for the next 5 or 6 weeks?
Well, that's what Jill was saying to me even before I went. She's all, "You going to get a few Danger Bottles out in Spain?" That's
fucking
like,
right.
So I tell a lie, I bought 19 of these, and Harry, our good friend that has been on the podcast, he was also somewhere... a week before myself, and he brought us back a wee bottle of absinthe. So there's a wee bottle of absinthe in there as well.
This Saturday's about to get on track. What time is it now? About 5:30.
So he wants to dip first.
I'll go.
Okay.
I'll get on there. Get out of that.
Dip into the canvas bag.
Very nice canvas bag you do have there.
I was trying to get as close to like the feeling of like, you know, like a Scrabble bag when you're taking out the tiles.
I like the feel of...
Tits.
This one, and I've got Ron. It's definitely a Captain Morgan's rub off, like, but I've got Ron Captain Hook spiced rum.
Ooh.
37.5%.
Well, you need to at least taste it, but the negotiations can happen afterwards.
Aye, we're not. I mean, like, we can just take a sip, but then just focus on the bottom mixer, because I'm not drinking this whiskey straight.
I know, jeez.
Remember, what do you call it? Like, Fon Eddie, or no, what do you call him? The one that went with Monica and friends and turned out he was an alcoholic.
Oh.
What do you call him?
I know, it was like Fun Eddie or something, was it? I can't imagine. But she ends up drinking more and he's all, I give a drinking problem. What do you got?
I get Kiwi Schnapps.
Oh, I'm so jealous. Because I really am not in the mood for a whiskey. I'm really, you want to swap?
Is that not rum?
It's rum, sorry. Do you want to swap?
Right, you need to at least try it first.
All right, we'll try it first. I'll try this rum. In all fairness,
yeah,
okay, what's yours?
Leave me out. Okay, I got... Oh, Jesus.
I think you got the same as me.
Ooh, I got the banned fruit. Banana liqueur.
Oh, I'm fucking jealous. I want something kind of fruity, and I got fucking rum. But yeah, sure.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
You never admit to be a fruity
here,
rum.
Do you know what? We'll take a sip each of each one and kind of give our opinions on it.
Then he's just going to hold on to whatever.
I know what you're doing. He knows me too well.
If it goes this way, he gets banana. If it goes that way, he gets kiwi. Like.
Quads on. Fruit from all angles. Like.
Okay. So right. We just try this all.
So I'll take a sip of, I don't understand this name, Ron Captain Hook. Not even Hook.
Hook.
Hook, H-U-K. Spice rum, 37.5%.
What the fuck is fucking
there? What the
fuck? What
hook?
The Captain Hook's happening here?
What the fuck is going on?
Right, I'll take a wee sip. I'm assuming.
Did you ever get rid of your can of giddy and you can't grip things?
Do you want me to open it for you? Right, go. Shan, you drink out first because your impressions.
I'm assuming that it's going to be. I'll just give a. First, I'm I'm assuming it's going to taste exactly like Captain Morgan's, because even the label and the fucking font is kind of a major ripoff. Mm. But anyway,
major ripoff.
Do you know what? That's actually fucking quite nice.
What strength is yours, BT Dubs?
Mine is 37.5%.
Mine's 20. What's yours?
12.
Ooh.
So Shan one's top trumps.
Do you know what, team? I fucking actually really like it. Actually, if you know,
you not when he swapped now?
No, I'm still passing him out. Like, but it's strange. That's not fucking. It's not gonna hit ourselves, Mickey. But it's strange. It's the first rum I've tasted that it kind of tastes like Captain Morgan's, but there's a big fucking vanilla taste in there, so it's like vanilla rum. It's fucking quite nice. Very nice indeed. He might have, well, you sip yours first.
Okay, I'll try my banana liqueur. Oh. Just tastes like bananas. No, it's...
I've got
it's,
nothing else.
No, it's nice. It's it doesn't... No way you kind of get that kind of like banana sweets kind of fake...
Uh-huh.
But then you have actual banana taste. It kind of tastes more like actual bananas than like banana flavoring. Love, so it's actually quite nice.
It's like a football special yolk. The banana one.
Not the oh, no, but that smells really bad. You need to hold your nose while you drink it. So what's your drink your kiwi thing?
Antonio Nadal. Schnapps, kiwi schnapps. Here we go.
On set of the film I'm working on at the minute, one of the actors on the film only found out the other day that you can eat the skin of a kiwi, and he was astounded by this.
Can
you? Apparently you can eat the skin of a kiwi.
You can eat it like an apple.
Aye.
Very hairy apple.
You can't get enjoyment out of that.
I wouldn't like that texture at all. Like, wouldn't like it. No. Wouldn't be for me. Anyway, what's like?
Eating a small mouse.
Right?
Lovely. It's like a summer drink.
Right, so can
is
we just...
Is it like eating a kiwi?
Can we just do a bit of a roundabout now then? And
do you want to go clockwise or anti-clockwise?
It doesn't matter. It's a bit of a free-for-all here, Mick, you know.
There you go.
Get on it. Right, so that's Danger Bottle.
Right. Also, we not reviewing all of these, then?
Nah, I think we've had enough of them. Maybe review them later on at some point.
Okay, we'll just all try them as we go. Okay, so what have we watched this week, folks?
I'll dive in very quickly because I don't have a lot to say about it. I watched this week Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, which is the new comedy with Zac Efron and Adam Devine from Workaholics, Aubrey Plaza, and my very, very favourite, Anna Kendrick. Are you right over there?
No.
Do you not like the rum?
It really just hit the back of my throat, like, really strong.
Did you get that vanilla?
It is very vanilla.
It's nice, though. Did you have a sub agent?
I'm surprised you like that, though, because you're normally not great at, like, drinking like raw stuff, like really strong raw stuff. Like that's
especially
that's
rums
same
or whiskeys.
Like
I struggle with drinking rum or whiskey neat. Like,
oh, fucking hell.
It would take me a while. I think it's nice. So I do like, but it's probably because I'm fucking half shot already. You know what I mean? So.
I know, because as soon as I drank it and like tasted it, I thought chance all blocked from last night or something.
It'll get me in a marathon that way.
No, we bit of coke in that area, would be beautiful.
We late. Oh
what? We bit of coke and.
Sorry, don't matter. Yeah, so Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, just out there. I think it was released in the States in June. Like I said, Zac Efron, Aubrey Plaza, Anna Kendrick,
Adam Devine
as well from Workaholics. I'm a big Workaholics fan, even though Adam Devine really fucking annoys me. I think that he has,
his face annoys me.
I think you know what Lizzo, but he plays on that so much. And yeah. I mean, like, the only thing is that I think he's limiting himself in a certain way, because through the TV show Workaholics, which he also writes and I think he produces it too, and then obviously he's getting a few more kind of feature film roles now.
He's in Modern Family as well. I caught him in an episode
Modern Family. And then obviously he was in Pitch Perfect and stuff like that. So he's starting to kind of carve out a wee kind of feature film role for himself, or feature film career for himself. But the only thing that I don't like is that, fair enough, it works for him, but he's playing a very specific role every time. Basically, a small man-child who's ridiculously over the top and shouts and is, you know, kind of overconfident.
Yeah.
And he plays the very same role in this film. And I think it's just going to... Because the sort of role he's playing is kind of gritting anyway, and I think it'll people will get tired of it very quickly. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Especially if he's not bringing any more to the table. Because in Workaholics, I would say he's my least favorite. You know, of fucking Anders.
Who's your favorite?
Probably Anders. I love. Do you watch Workaholics?
I watched the first series because it was on Amazon Prime. But I would have wanted to watch more. It's just. None of them's on
I like Anders because it's cool because Anders Holmvik because he's like the straight sort of character, like the, what would you say,
non-homosexual,
not the sexuality. He is, you know, the kind of straight guy, and the fact that he's not the quirky one.
Yeah.
Can you make a rum and coke with
it? I know, work away. It's Shan's thing, man.
Yeah, work away. But the other two are sort of quirky and stuff like that, but I love the fact that not only does he play the straight guy, but then also he's got his hip-hop alter ego. Have you ever seen that? No?
I don't think so.
He's got designs on being like this hip-hop superstar, so sometimes when he's trying to get out of an awkward situation, he'll just kind of put on this fucking hip-hop persona. Like he's fucking one scene. It's one of my favorite lines ever in any fucking comedy. He walks into his library and he's got like the bandana on, the glasses, acting like this hip-hop star. He's all, sup all these books! But anyway, back to Mike and Dave and the Wedding Dates. Seen the reviews, heard a lot of like pretty much negative press, like, oh, it's not very good, but I just wanted an easy Sunday watch, you know, for me and her to watch on that she would like, and maybe just get a laugh, which we're waiting on our fucking ticket to come. And enjoyed it way more than what I was expecting. It actually is. I mean, you know the way a lot of the times for trailers, for comedies especially, they'll just chuck all the best jokes in. And usually, as soon as you see all the best jokes in the film, that's it, and there's nothing else. You know, they don't have really anything else they offer. This had a really good strike rate. I mean, from the start, I see it had a really good fucking hit rate of fucking laughs and jokes and some really good setups. I don't want to spoil anything, but there's a quad biking setup that happens, which is pretty good. But essentially then, the story is about Mike and Dave. They're two, apparently it's based on real events, but they're two...
Oh, no, yeah, I seen an interview with the real guys.
No, exactly, yeah, because, I mean, if going by these two characters, if they're real people, I don't want to see them, you know what I mean?
Are they just kind of, like, bros in the film? Like, they're obviously actual, they're actual brothers. You know, like, bros, like, kind of douchebags? Yeah?
No, do you know what? I was expecting that, and that's what kind of turned me off the film. They start...
Because that's what the real people seem
like. Yeah, at time. I think that they probably, the screeners had to tone the real people down just to make them actually fucking likable. But I was expecting, I don't want any of this sort of bro fucking mentality and like they're just going crazy and throwing fucking kickers, man. But Adam Devine's character's a bit like it because, you know, it's Adam Devine playing him and that's all he can fucking do. But Zac Efron, he's actually a well-rounded character, especially for like a sort of light comedy about two guys who bring dits to a fucking, you know, a wedding in Hawaii because their dad makes them because their father makes them do so because... Every other big family gathering that they go to, they fuck up because they're always too drunk or they're creating too much trouble. You know what I mean? But, Zac Efron is nice and well-rounded. And I like the relationship that he kind of forms with Anna Kendrick in it too because she has her own history. Basically, it's not a spoiler because you're told this in the first 5 minutes. She gets jilted at the altar by her, husband-to-be, but it never happens. And her going back to a wedding is almost like trauma because, you know, it starts to remind her of everything.
Mm.
And they could play it for laughs and stuff like that, which they do sometimes, but they actually form a nice, neat wee relationship on there. And it's, you know, for a 90-minute film, which is kind of more focused on laughs, there's a nice wee bit of heart there too, I think. But Aubrey Plaza, I think she was probably trying to get away from, you know, the way Aubrey Plaza, I thought she was a bit of a one-trick pony. I thought, you know, she just does that sort of deadpan humor.
Yeah.
And maybe this is her trying to get away from that image that she's created for herself, because in this, it's not deadpan humor, but she's almost like the dickhead, like, you know, like the nasty sort of humor. And I don't know if it's the writing or it's her performance, but she just becomes dislikable for me anyway. I didn't find her funny. I found her just more like she's a cunt. You know, why we spend so much fucking time with her.
Mm.
especially in comparison to Anna Kendrick and Zac Efron's characters, who are nice and warm-hearted people. Adam Devine can pull it off because he's a dickhead, but there's no threat there. Whereas Aubrey Plaza's performance, it seems like she's just a nasty piece of work, and shit that she's saying wasn't really funny. It just comes off as hurtful, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's my own opinion. But it's nice to see that she's at least trying to do something else, you know what I mean?
But even in saying that, what the kind of stuff she did in, like, Parks and Rec, and then even all her stuff she's been doing where it's deadpan stuff, but then she does always come out with insults or kind of put, like, they put people down.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just, it's an extension of that side of it and not so much the deadpanness.
Could be. As I say, I don't know if it's the writing or her character. Or her performance, maybe, but it's just that the character doesn't work for me, really. I just think that they were probably going for, like, you know, a sort of cold-hearted, sort of icy humor, but it just didn't come off. She just came off as nasty, as opposed to being, like, sort of funny in a way, like, you know what I mean? But, oh, that's good fun. 90 minutes. You know, it's about two boys who go to fucking Hawaii with dits, and they introduced a sister character whose wedding it is, and her husband. And I think they do a really good job of that, considering, like, with 90-minute comedies, it's usually very condensed.
Yeah.
You know, it's only usually focused on maybe two or three characters, four at the most. But in this, I think they do a good job of just kind of rounding all the characters, because the sister gets a lot of screen time, and even her husband's introduced, and their relationship's sort of investigated. And I think for the running time of the film, and what the focus of the film is, just being, like, a sort of light comedy, they do a good job of not only rounding the characters, but just kind of making you care about the characters, really. You know, they're not just glorified extras. They actually are part of the story, and they all get their own sort of jokes as well. So, yeah, it's good.
Do they try and act that Adam Devine is just as ripped as Zac Efron?
No, they have an in-joke in the fact that Adam Devine plays the older brother in the film, so he's older than Zac Efron is, which I was confused about, because I think Zac Efron looks older, but whatever. But it's that Adam's the older brother, but he never really lived up to his potential, whereas Zac Efron is perfection, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, he's ripped, he's fucking ridiculously good looking, he's a lot nicer than Adam Devine, who's, like, really emotionally unstable and stuff again. And there's a running joke that every woman who kind of comes up to Adam just kind of fobs him off. Like, even Aubrey Plaza says he's almost like a man who you would think there's more there, but he just stopped growing at some point. No, what is it? No, what did she say? She's all, it's like, so Adam's like when you look at a man and say one of those kind of circus hall of mirrors thing, and you're expecting like a taller guy there, but then you see him and no, that's just him. But they pretty much obviously, because it's a Zac Efron vehicle as well, like, so they're trying to promote him,
yeah,
you know what I mean, and trying to make him look better. But they do acknowledge it, and they definitely don't try and acknowledge that Adam Devine's more ripped. Very rarely does he get his shirt off, put it that way.
No, because in the trailers, it kind of seemed like they were trying to put them as, oh, these two brothers that are kind of
equals.
They
and
work.
Stuff, yeah. No, I kind of got that from the trailer too, but no, in reality, oh, of course, as well, Efron gets his standard contracted shirtless scene on there. But
I think he's actually.
You don't waste that shit.
He did say in an interview he's going to contractually have it that he doesn't do it anymore.
He's starting to get sick. Do you know what? And fair play to him, just very quickly, they sign off on Mike and Dave and they wedded it.
Very quickly, can I try that kiwi stuff?
You can indeed. It's delicious. I was sort of supping away at it there. I've near enough polished it myself. Thank you. But when Zac Efron first kind of came on the scene, and, you know, High School Musical and stuff like that, obviously that it's a sort of the poison chalice, I suppose, of being a child actor. You're all really loved or really hated, and a lot of people are going to hate you because, like, oh, it's High School Musical, it's a load of shit. I think he's done an unbelievable job of basically redirecting his career path. Because he's made a couple, not, I wouldn't say bold choices, but a lot of people wrote him off as just being a pretty boy fucking teeny actor, and nobody gave a fuck about him. And I think he's pretty good. I think he's a good actor. I don't think he's amazing. I don't think he's challenged himself enough yet, but he's focused now on sort of adult comedies and stuff, and he done Me and Orson Welles, and I just like the sort of way he's going about
Paper
his career.
Paperboy as well.
Hmm?
Paperboy is
Paperboy, Paperboy as well, Aidan.
That was a fucking weird film.
But you know, I
McConaughey brothers, isn't it?
I can't imagine if they're brothers, but either. But then
it's Nicole Kidman's in there too, isn't it?
And fucking John Cusack just being the biggest creep you've ever seen.
Ah, he's fucking class in it, actually.
There's just the scene where like Nicole Kidman goes to visit him and they can't touch, but he wants to have sex with her. So he just asks her to like, pull up her skirt and all, and he's just looking at her like,
oh, John, stop it.
It's pure creepy. Like.
But
good film.
Sign off. Meg and David need wedding. It's easy watch, 90 minutes long. Zac Efron and Anna Kendrick's relationship is quite nice, and they're two very likable characters, and a lot of laughs in there. And also, you'll just get a lot of laughs from the surrounding cast, which is always nice, you know what I mean? Because sometimes you get just bored of two people's relationship or bored of focusing on one or two characters. So it's well-rounded in that way. I enjoyed it. It's perfect for a Sunday.
Nice. This week... you son of a bitch! This week I watched... Well, say this week. Whenever I was in Spain. When was in Spain? Last week?
Yes. You were in Spain last week.
I watched Tusk.
Is that the Kevin Smith one?
The Kevin Smith one.
What is this actually? Sorry.
Justin Long. Haley Joel Osment, is that his name? From Sixth Sense.
Yep.
He's on there.
He grew up weird looking.
He grew up weird.
Pretty weird looking.
Well, to be fair, probably everybody does. You don't have that reference point for everyone.
I just seen a photo of him recently, and I was like, he looks like someone in a Madame Tussauds or something. he doesn't look like a real... It looks like a wax fist or something he's got.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. He just looks like a person.
He put on so much weight. Is that what you mean?
No, not even that. No, I don't know. He's got like one of... You ever see those people, their fist doesn't look real? You know what I mean? Like, it looks like they've got a fake fist. Or is this just me?
No, I wouldn't say that. But plastic.
Well, there, let's get a couple of photos of him up here. Anyway, continue talking about the one.
Well, I don't know. Isn't there freckles and his hair kind of spiky, so it looks like an Arnie wig from Terminator or something?
His hair isn't spiky. Well, in Tusk, he has long hair.
Well, in AAM, I'm thinking of.
I see. This is when he was still a child.
No. But you're saying he grew up weird looking.
Shan said that hair.
I just ran with it. In Entourage, he plays Billy Bob Thornton's son. He's like this producer. He's a bit of a wanger.
He's grand. I think he looks normal. He looks a bit like me, bro.
No, you're far better looking.
Don't do that to yourself.
You're far better looking, Bambi.
Thanks. Although, I won't go on that. But Haley Joel's gets Andy some mighty fine looking woman in this one.
Oh, uh-huh. Here we go. Right, I perked up.
No, okay, right. Tusk. It's it was like a couple of years ago. Or was it just like last year? It's either 2014 or 2015.
It's 2014. It's 2 years old.
But yeah, it's Kevin Smith film. It actually spawned from a conversation Kevin Smith had on one of his podcasts. Mm-hmm. There was this news story about... I can't even mind what... Because I've listened to the podcast, but I can't even mind completely the whole story. But they find this news story about this guy. And in some ways, he's related to a walrus. Then him and Scott Mosier, who's his producer, who he does the podcast with. They just go off in this whole riff of this guy was befriended a walrus and he tries to turn people into a walrus and all his hair. So that's essentially what the film is. So Justin Long plays this very successful podcaster and then he's going up to Canada to interview someone, but then that falls through. So when he's up in Canada, he's just trying to find someone else to interview because he spent the money to go up there. So he needs to do something. And Haley Joel Osment is the person he does the podcast with. And then Justin Long has a very attractive girlfriend as well. I can't remember her name in it though. But anyway, it doesn't matter. But,
always do this.
I always forget the woman's name.
Subconscious sexism.
Subconscious sexism. But yeah, so he finds this ad of someone says they want someone to live in their spare room. They won't charge them rent. They just need help. Because they're in a wheelchair, so just need help around the house and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But in the ad, it says, like, oh, I've lived a life, I can tell stories and all this hair can crack. So Justin Long goes to visit him and says to him, like, oh, I just want to interview you for my podcast.
Is Haley Joel Osment in the wheelchair?
No, Haley Joel Osment is back in America. This is what Justin Long does in Canada.
Okay.
Haley Joel Osment is just, that's who he normally does the podcast with. He's Justin Long's friend.
Right. Oh, yeah, okay.
No, it's a older boy. I can't even mind his name. Look it up for me, John.
Well, indeed.
See, not sexist, just bad memory. But
or sexist and ageist.
That's also another option.
Some old fucker.
Some old bastard.
Some old fucking drunk.
Some old fucking woman. Just
some old fucking... some old fucking drubbly bag. Just...
Oh, is it Michael Parks?
Is it Michael Parks?
Who was in Red State. Aye. He's fucking so good in Red State. Apparently, according to Kevin Smith and Tarantino too, who actually cast them, I think Rodriguez cast them in From Dusk Till Dawn.
Aye.
Kevin Smith and Tarantino have both said that Michael Parks, yes, is that the actor?
Yeah.
They've both said that Michael Parks could have been one of the biggest actors ever in Hollywood, but early in his career, because apparently he was a bit of a diva, he burnt a lot of bridges. And basically, it was only through Tarantino's appreciation of his earlier films that he cast him, that he got Rodriguez to cast him from Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah.
And then obviously Kevin Smith liked him. But he just made a lot of enemies in Hollywood, and that kind of fucked up his career chances. But like, if you've seen Red State.
He's amazing, Red State.
In all fairness, that'll actually be my. Because I think it's Kevin Smith's best film. That'll be my recommendation. But we'll talk about that later.
But yeah, so yeah, Michael Parks is the guy he meets, and then he tells this whole story about he was on a ship and he got shipwrecked and all, and then this walrus came along and took care of him and coddled him and just treated like he said his only friend was a walrus. And
do you wonder how some scrubs get off the ground?
And he was all like, he just saying like the walrus like the nice like the best creature in nature and all is here gonna crack. So basically what happens then is he starts turning Justin Long into a walrus. And that's kind of the whole plot of the film, basically. But
is it twisted like, or is it sort of bittersweet?
Well, you see, this is the thing. What Kevin Smith tries to do is what I think he was trying to do is trying to make like a dark kind of horror comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't really come off, and I think it is down to Kevin Smith's just limitations in his direction.
Yeah,
because the horror bits aren't scary enough, they're not creepy enough, and the comedy bits aren't funny enough.
Uh-huh.
And I think with that kind of premise, because it has just a kind of fucked up nature to it, I think there is a really good kind of dark comedy in there, maybe with a more skilled director.
Yeah.
And I'm a fan of Kevin Smith. Like, I listen to his podcasts and stuff, and like I've enjoyed
his previous films.
I'm a fan
of him, but you've realized now that directing wise, fair enough, in his own stuff like podcast, and then he obviously does like, you know, the Evening with Kevin Smith and all that sort of like public speaking sort of thing. But I think directorially he's been on the fucking dip for a while now. Like, you know, he's on that dip. But I mean, he's been on the, because you look, I mean, there was that, pretty much even though Red State is a good film, that bombed as well, like, you know what I mean, it didn't make any money, and then there was Tusk, and Cop Out, that done fuck all, you know what I mean, and a shite as well.
But he'll say that himself, like.
That's what I like about him, he's very open.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Since
he stepped outside the Viewers universe, it started to go a bit downhill, like, you know what I mean? As soon as he basically stopped making films with Jay and Silent Bob in it,
yeah,
he had a big cult following. I'm very surprised he hasn't went back that, though.
Well, he's doing Clerks 3 and Mallrats, which is the Mallrats sequel.
Mallrats is my favourite film growing up. Until I was about 13, caught myself on. Don't get me wrong, I still got a good place in my heart.
I think the Mallrats sort of characters and story is far better than Clerks. Always thought that. Like.
Clerks gets to be a bit tiresome. I mean, the dialogue's good and it's really snappy, and that's why it kind of, along with Pulp Fiction, was one of the fucking the beacons of early 90s independent cinema in America. Mm. And it was just really cool to see, because I think it was an inspiration to a lot of people too, because Kevin Smith made Clerks, I think, for Sean like $22,000, and the only way that he got money for it is he maxed out like 7 credit cards and like sold all his shit just to get it off the ground. And I think,
didn't he pretend he was the owner of a video shop?
I've seen like that. And even just that drive just to get a fucking feature film made on that amount of money, and you know, for it to be a success, was, I'd say, really inspiring to a lot of young directors.
But sure, like, he was inspired by Richard Linklater.
Yeah, I know, he done Slacker.
Exactly.
But only Slacker. That's all Richard Linklater. only ever done Slacker. Never heard him again. But I suppose it probably doesn't inspire a lot of people. But I do understand what you're saying. I think though, the limitations with Clerks are probably down to the fact that it's made on $22,000, and they just.
But even
really
the sequel, I find well.
The sequel's grand. Like, I mean, never it's all right. I don't think it's great. I don't think it's that bad. It's just it's watchable, as we say. But with Mallrats, I mean, Kevin Smith said himself, $22,000 for Clerks. Apparently, he was handed $6 million for Mallrats, and he was like, "I don't even need
that."
This
is the very next film, was it?
Yeah. He was, and it was only like a year after. And he was like, "I don't need this much money. Like, you know, I could make this for like half this." You know what I mean?
Because even Clerks too, I think he was handed. I watched the making of. He was handed like, I think it was something like $20 million or something. And he says, "You know what? I think there was an area of Jersey where he lives where he says there was a couple like Burger Kings that were just closing down. It was just that time financially and stuff. There was a few, I don't know if it was Burger King, but it was drive-throughs were closing down. And so he says, we'll just fucking we'll get one of these places that have just recently closed down, so it'll look all right. And I think he just had all these ways of doing it cheap, and he says, just give me 10 or give me 5, you know. He just, I don't know.
Well, you don't buy Clerks too? Because instead of getting Trailers and stuff as well, there was like a motel like across the street or something. So they got everybody a room in a motel.
Nice one.
I amused one day up there.
He was staying there and all there and all, and his whole thing is, I think I might just fucking move in though.
Off the skag at that point, was he?
I think he just got off with it.
They get given like 10 motel rooms for like a cheap rate and all, and then like we saw those groups because you get like TV, you get electricity, you get it all sorted and all.
Nice one.
And you get breakfast and all, and then he didn't realise that after they left, the price is just going to like skyrocket again.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh fuck, it's $6.
Do you not think, we'll just bring him up very quickly, that Jason Mewes has one of the strangest acting careers in like cinema, because he's instantly recognisable as being like this big cult, you know, Jay and Silent Bob and stuff like that, but he was never really an actor. The only reason that he got the Jay role was because he was Kevin Smith's friend, and Kevin Smith thought he was funny. So
he just wrote him as a person, and then
they never expected the success of Jay and Silent Bob or for it to be this big cultural fucking hit. So then he just kind of kept doing. But besides that, if you actually look at his IMDb, he hasn't done a lot. Obviously, he's had fucking like drug problems and stuff like that. But
wasn't it an episode of Glee, wasn't he?
Aye, but I mean, bar Jay and Silent Bob.
I watched Glee was because he was in it for like the run. I was like, fuck, amazing. I was just like, there's all I'm fucking Glee ones, or I must be Glee.
But like Bar Jay and Silent Bobby hasn't really done any other acting work. It just seems like he's happy to do that because he was never an actor in the first place, you know what I mean?
Well, no, like,
he does bits and pieces, I think, but it's a weird one, like, you know.
I think after like the whole Jay and Silent Bob films ended, I think he did, and obviously that's when he kind of got off drugs stuff as well, that I think he did start trying to act more, because like, alright, it's a bad example, but like, he's in like a film called Bottoms Up with like Paris Hilton and stuff. But he has done loads of like way smaller stuff, and
just
even
amused bit in the boat. Ask for smack up, boys.
But I think he has done a lot of kind of just smaller kind of stuff where like that's probably all he can get. Like, but I think he is trying to give it like a decent shout at it.
I think as well, because he's just so associated with the role of Jay, it would be a fucking nightmare for him to get all the roles, like, you know what I mean? And you actually look at the parallel. I mean, like, it's actually a fucking nearly a perfect parallel of Nick Frost, wasn't an actor, wrote them, they spaced, and then obviously led on the show on the dead and stuff.
And he was a smackhead.
Because I was a smackhead, like, of course. But because he was just Simon Pegg's mucker, Simon Pegg thought he was the funniest person on earth. But he's carved out his own career because he's not as associated with just one role. You know what I mean? Because
he was in like the Boat the Rock and stuff.
Boat the Rock, and then Cuban Fury and stuff.
Cuban Fury, fuck me.
Was that about rough as bags?
Yeah,
and I thought, like, Nick Frost, love him. Rashida Jones, love her. And then and I was thinking, oh,
love her.
Chris, I've never
yeah, like Chris O'Dowd.
He's never won me over. And it's sad to say, as a fellow Irishman, he's never won me over.
I like him.
I don't like him. I can bear him.
I think he's good in Bridesmaids. I think he's good and I think he's brilliant in The Boat That Rocked.
Because
there's one scene where the fucking have you seen it?
I have seen it, but I honestly can't remember much from it.
First, follow me and lead everyone to see each other.
Aww.
Not called The Boat That Rocked though in the States. They renamed it.
It was like Pirate Radio.
But Nick Frost fucking amazing that he's like this fucking sex god or something. He's fucking brilliant. But Simon Pegg's is the first time he's seen him. He was at some fucking party or something, and he says he looked over and he saw Simon Pegg sleeping against the stage speaker while the band was playing. Way up behind the locker. The band was fucking blaring and he was asleep just.
I love though how, like, I kind of get a buzz off how best friends they are, you know what I mean? Like, it seems like they are absolutely like heterosexual life partners. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we're never going to be that happy.
We are bamboo. We are, we'll get there. You're the Nick to my Simon, or the Simon to my Nick, or whatever it is.
Bamboo and Chansey.
Just because. What?
Did you say Bamboo and Chansey?
Bamboo and Chansey? Chansey, my new name. You can be Edgar Wright. You actually have the same haircut as Edgar Wright.
Hey, you can be the director, me and Chan will be the stars.
You calling him Bambi or Bamboo?
Bamboo.
Bamboo. Because I'm a panda.
Because he used to be called Panda and then just kind of led on the Bamboo. That's a nice, it's sort of an affectionate name too. It's a new thing, by the way, so I've been going the last 2 weeks.
I know, it happened on the podcast a few weeks ago. But yeah, anyway.
Definitely blogged.
Back to Tusk is, I know, I think that the idea is better than the way it's executed. And I really did want to like the film because I knew so much about it just from listening to Kevin Smith's podcast, and I liked the podcast where it came from and stuff. And he talks about it like that it was like slated by critics and stuff, but he talks about why he did it and the reason like why he did it in a certain way or whatever. And I respect so much where he's coming from, that he's making these low budget films just for his fans, and he's not trying to make it anything bigger. But it's just I didn't enjoy it, and I was a bit disappointed with myself.
Yeah.
But I know, just the horror isn't scary enough and the comedy isn't funny enough. Because it's like Kevin Smith brand of comedy as well. Mm. And when you're trying to be like creepy and build tension, and then it just kind of cuts the Johnny Depp being a strange policeman.
Yeah.
And it's a bit jarring.
They always say as well, that, I mean, and Kevin Smith, again, in fairness to him, always... He always sheds light on his limitations. He's very open. He's very honest and stuff like that. But he says, listen, I get paid a lot of money to do fucking dick and fart jokes. Like, but I don't see how dick and fart jokes would work with that tone of that film. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I know it doesn't.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying with Jerry, like you're saying. Like,
yeah.
But at the same time, it's Red State again. Sure, we can talk about it when you recommend it.
But yeah. There's some kind of funny moments that I don't want. You think, was he going for a joke there or not? Like when you first see Justin Long in full walrus mode, it's funny just because how stupid it looks like. And then there's
full wall
like. But then like there's a whole fight, him and what do you call him again, Michael Parks, there's a whole fight that they have together then, and it's really ridiculous, and I think that is kind of what he is going for, and that kind of bit works.
Yeah.
Because it's so ridiculous and so stupid that it's kind of funny.
Didn't he see that scrap on Coronation Street the other night, though?
No, what happened there?
I don't know. She was watching it, but...
I love how you don't say her name. Just ask, she was watching it.
But, but anyway...
Who was watching it?
It was on the TV, and I don't know if... Obviously, I don't fucking follow Coronation Street, but I don't know if they're going for like a more light-hearted sort of angle now on Coronation Street, but it was like a slapstick fight. Like, they were scrapping each other, and I was... Because you assume that in Coronation Street, there was a fight that's for dramatic purposes.
Somebody's getting knotted, like.
Aye, it's for dramatic purposes, or it's they fucking carry on a certain story. Then, come on! Phone's off, please.
Right, it's for work tomorrow.
Jesus
Christ. What are we doing, then?
We're just recording.
Recording what, though? Don't be sad, Bamboo. I know you're flustered and you seem a bit angry. It's okay. It happened. It's happened. There's no going back. We'll just power on and get it done.
It's all right. It's okay. I'm trying to cheer you up.
Right.
Okay.
I know it's about shit.
We're just going to do recommendations.
Right. Okay, look. I just have to check what year Red's it was. I think it's 2009, but... Gee, you're going to head.
I just have to check what year it is.
What year is it? 2011? Okay.
What year?
What year is it? It's like Jumanji, isn't it? What year is this?
Okay, so... okay, right. For the listeners, you might have just heard a full conversation with no gaps and then a jump, or you might have just heard... oh no! Either way, it'd be a full conversation with no jumps. Yeah. But okay, right. Basically,
<I'm alive>, like...
we talked for about 40 minutes, but now we've might have lost that recording. So we were talking about Curtis Hanson and his films, and that spawned off the how Toni Collette is a woman on the edge and whatnot.
She always gets a touch.
But so yeah, if you've just heard that, that's great. But it may be corrupted, and we might not be able to retrieve it. So if you haven't heard that...
fuck's sake!
You missed it. It was a great conversation.
Yeah, it was probably the best thing we've ever done.
It's probably the best thing we've... I mean...
But in reality, we played on your favor. Like,
like, during that 40 minutes, I thought, like, this is why we started the podcast here. Yeah.
We've arrived.
Yeah. This is what's going to get us the podcast awards.
Big podcast dollars.
I think Fate was the editor this evening.
Yeah. So yeah, we're just going to go straight into your recommendations. So it might be a long episode, a short episode,
maybe no episode.
Maybe no episode. We shall see. But yeah, so recommendations.
My recommendation is, I brought it up earlier on, Red State 2011. Obviously directed by Kevin Smith, and I mean, like, he gets all his plaudits and stuff again for the Vuce universe, and you know, everything kind of related to Jay and Silent Bob.
What's the name of it? The Vuce.
The Vuce. It's, see, because the production company's called Vuce, but then, like, fans of Kevin Smith called the Vuce universe.
Okay.
It's a shit, like, but I think it's his best film, and the reason that I appreciate it too is that it was, after watching all, like, what is it, five original Vuce, like, sort of Jay and Silent Bob films, and I think that was the first one that I watched, because I didn't even borrow a copy because I heard it was absolutely shit. I think I was out before it. It was the first non-Vuce universe
or
film.
Jersey Girl.
I don't watch that either. But it was the first one that I watched that it basically wasn't revolving around that sort of, that world. And I thought, I can't really imagine Kevin Smith doing a film outside of that world, but he proved me wrong. Unfortunately, like we've been saying, he's kind of taken a bit of that, you know, in the past couple of years with, you know, films like Tusk. But really good. And just to get on the film, basically, it is Kevin Smith's take on the kind of infamous Westboro Baptist Church, who are, like, fascist fucking right-wing Christian fundamentalists who think that gays are evil and shouldn't exist and all this sort of fucking stuff. But it's his take.
But they have bad points as well.
But then, Michael Parks, who you were talking about earlier, is the lead character in it, and he basically plays like the head of this really fucked up church. And what they're doing is they're not just preaching anymore, but they're basically going on the, like, armed revolt. So they kidnap three guys who are basically just out to fucking get stoned and have a bit of a drink, and they want to execute them in front of this mass, you know, just to kind of show these are, like, the sort of drug abusing liberals that we're up against, and basically just they make a stand, and then it turns on basically like a big sort of siege standoff film, and then there's kind of elements of, like, the other world, you know, like the afterlife and stuff with God at the end. There's a really cool scene with a bell that I won't spoil that kind of makes you think, oh, is this kind of now turning on the going from the real world and the, like, the sort of supernatural or something like that. But great film, really tense, really just fast paced. Actually, kind of reminded me of a Greengrass film, you know what I mean, Colin? Where it's just a kind of gun and run, and it's just really tight. There's no fat on it. Michael Parks is brilliant, and he's unbelievably sinister as this sort of really evil fucking preacher. And Yeah, for a thriller, it's really fucking tense. Keeps you on your toes. And I think as well, it always makes it a bit easier to enjoy a thriller if you actually properly despise the antagonist. And here, it's very easy to despise them because they're like piece of shit human beings. So you're really backwards and fucking narrow-minded or whatever else. But yeah, it's good. And it's just a pity that, I don't know, Kevin Smith never really kind of took off from there. Instead, he done films like Tusk.
Well, were you saying, like, it's really tense and stuff? Like, why couldn't that have been carried in the Tusk? Because, like, that's kind of what he should have been going
It's
for,
weird but... because, I mean, bar, like, some of the odd dick and fart joke, you know, between, like, the three sort of guys that they kidnap and stuff like that, there's not a lot of humor in Red State. I mean, there's a bit, but most of it is just a straight thriller, you know what I mean? And then John Goodman actually pops up at the end of Red State, too, as basically like the head of the cops during the siege, and he's fucking brilliant as well. He's always brilliant though. He's just one of those actors.
But at that time though, Kevin Smith was like kind of enthralled with like a kind of campaign from what he called the Westboro
Baptist Church.
Yeah. Like when he released that film, they were protesting that film and stuff. Yeah, and he had the whole back and forth with them as well. But like, he was loving it because it just made it more of a fucking spectacle
Easy
for
publicity.
His film. Like, yeah.
Easy publicity. And this all kind of started way back with Dogma and stuff. Because obviously the whole thing about a lot of Kevin Smith films is
that Dogma's brilliant.
I love Dogma. I mean, like, it's... I'd say actually probably that's near enough as a second best film, Dogma.
I would say Mallrats, Dogma, and Red State are his three best. Like.
Chasing Amy in there.
Actually, Chasing Amy, in fairness, like, Chasing Amy is really fucking good as well.
This is why Chad realized Kevin Smith's a great filmmaker.
But you know what? I wouldn't say a great film. He's done really good films. I don't think he's a great director. He knows his limitations, and you know he exceeds them sometimes.
That whole thing about having the threesome and all, I've never got that. I always thought that was just really stupid.
It was forced, but then I think it was the '90s, and this whole fucking idea of like kind of new age relationships and pretty much swinging and kind of having open relationships kind of became a wee bit niche. So I think it was just a kind of, it's very much of its time, just namely, like, because now it's not accepted that, you know, people are in open relationships and that's just a modern world. But I think in the '90s, it's always been happening, but I think the '90s is when people kind of start talking about it more and being a bit more open about it. You know what I mean? And plus as well, just, I mean, I think in the '90s, it's really when the sort of LGBT community kind of
started to come more
into the mainstream.
I never got how they can get to that logic of, it's like, he sets Jason Lee and Amy down, and what do you call it, and he says that
Joey Lauren Adams,
aye,
just her name, lottery is popping in my head there.
Bloody gorgeous.
She's fucking the ultimate. She's one of those 90s actresses, just done so much in the 90s. And then
she's great.
And then like Daddy as well. He was like, great, either me and you, like Jason Lee's, all right, either me and you are going to bang, or you and Amy are going to bang, or...
What? Who in here getting fucked?
Who in here getting fucked? But it's just this, I don't know how that solves anything.
Yeah.
Or how it solved it. I don't know. I never got that. It was like a really weird conversation that I don't think...
Do you not think that is the sort of point of the story, that Ben Affleck's character doesn't get this and he just wants Amy to himself, hence he's chasing Amy, whereas Amy is a lot freer and more sure of herself than what he is, and she kind of wants to have this open relationship and, you know, sleep with other people and do your own thing.
No, she
and
doesn't.
And that's what frustrates him. But I mean, like, she kind of, because she's a lesbian and stuff like that,
she doesn't want an open relationship. It's the fact that she had like a promiscuous history that's what freaks him out, because he didn't have any of that.
Yeah.
And because
the whole two guys at the same time sort of thing.
And then,
but that's what I'm saying. She's just a lot freer and more sure of her sexuality. And he kind of wants the more traditional, let's just go out. And I don't want to think about, you know, past relationships and stuff like that. I think it's just two different mindsets of relationship and sexuality kind of meeting. I think it's interesting. And for Kevin Smith, who's not known for his fucking nuances or subtlety, I think he does it pretty well in that film, in fairness.
I know, it's a decent film. Definitely.
Well, you have the whole thing in Clerks as well, where he's raging about how many guys his girlfriend had sex with and stuff. Like.
Yeah.
It probably kind of... like, that's probably the acorn of...
What is it? Because is she not, like, fucking...
Or, like, sucked, like, 15 dicks 15 or something. Dicks,
and she's fucking, like, she's sleeping with a guy who has the fucking heart attack in a bog or something. I haven't watched Clerks in years.
I really can't
remember. But, no, a boy definitely dies in the toilet anyway. And I think she was in the process of riding him. That's all I got. But, yeah, Red State.
A Trish the Dish. Nobody calls me that.
But yeah, it's just kind of like Kevin Smith, when he's been lauded for films, it's more down to the writing. And Kevin Smith says that he's more of a writer than a director.
He's so fucking pretty well directing, though, isn't
he? But that's what I'm saying. But when one of his films kind of excels, it's more down to the writing of the film and the kind of story of the film.
I think Kevin Smith will put his hands up and say that, you know, he'd be kind of the Jon Apatow comedy style director where you just kind of frame it, get a long focus, and just point the camera. You're not going
He always says he never moves the camera.
Yeah, you're not going for any fucking fancy cranes or tracks or anything like that. I mean, it's just basically capture the action, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or try capture the dialogue, the actor saying, and that's all you really need, because, like you were just saying, his films are more about the characters and what they say as opposed to what's going on. Like,
it's actually weird, because in one of his podcasts maybe a few months ago, he was talking about he directed an episode of The Flash, the TV show. And, like, he said it was one of the few times he went there just as a pure director. Like, he directed the first episode of Reaper and stuff, and he's done a few things where he hasn't written it, but he's directing it.
Yeah.
The Cop-Out was one of those as well.
That was the first film he directed. He didn't write, I think.
Aye. But,
not the only reason it was shit. Many other problems there.
But with The Flash specifically, because you're dealing with a superhero, and he's coming, like with Reaper, he was the director of the pilot, so he's kind of setting the tone and of the whole series then, and the way it's shot. Scorsese or Boardwalk. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And so, but if he's coming into the show, The Flash, it's already an established thing, and they already know how The Flash does his Flash things, like. Like, he just kind of runs off screen, and then there's like a puff of air, and then that's him flying off, and that's how they do the special effects and all. So he's kind of a step backwards from all that air kind of stuff. He's not telling people how to do this stuff. So he's literally just there. It's already an well-oiled machine, so he does. He was saying he didn't really know what else he had to do.
He's just going there to do a job. He's basically just going on there as a fucking technician just to tell people what to do, you know what I mean?
But he said on a podcast, like, that's when he first kind of realized how to direct. Yeah. And it's mad that he's saying that a few months ago, directing an episode of The Flash.
Even though he's been a director for like fucking 20 years at this point.
But it was mental to hear a director of all those films, they say that now.
Yeah. Strange, I suppose, in the fact, and we'll get off this because we want to do our recommendations and get the fuck out of here. But it's strange.
Well, one of us does.
Well, I've got a thing tonight that I have to go to. But
it's always a thing.
I know. I wish it was nothing because I just know, really want to sit me fucking hole.
I know.
I know. He knows. Thanks, Bamboo. But it's strange though, because if you think, say, if you're a cinematographer or you're boomer operator or whatever else, there's a certain. I've always been interested in this. There's a certain skill that you have to learn how to do it. And you have to learn about the equipment. And they always say, like, oh, the best directors have kind of started from the bottom and worked their way up. I don't necessarily think that's true. Sometimes it is true. It's just each their own. But with direction, it's like, what skills do you have to have? You know, it's obviously you have to be a people person. You have to be able to communicate pretty well. You have to have a vision and a story in your head. But, I mean, anybody can say that they could do that. Whereas, you know, if you're a boom operator or you're a cameraman, you have to actually have an actual skill, you know what I mean, of operating and being a technician. But a director, it's strange. Like, what's the criteria? What's the list of qualifications that you have to be a director? You know, it's weird.
Just if they truck people and they're letting you do.
It is. It's an interesting concept, though. Considering they're the most important person on set. But sometimes, in some cases, like Kevin Smith, maybe don't really...
He was the director because he wrote the thing. Because he did it himself. Yeah. And that's why he was the director.
It's interesting, though.
Yeah. You know?
But then there's...
It is one of those undefinable things. I mean, like, a producer as well. What's a producer? Even people get the credit of producer when they've done fuck all.
Oh, well, the whole executive producer thing, which is basically just a pat on the back if you're friends with the actual fucking producer.
Like, because it can span from being really involved to doing fuck all, you know what I mean? Producer and director is just like, nothing qualifies you as a director other than the previous things you've done.
That's exactly what I'm saying, though. I think that's the interesting concept. I think it's just even more interesting because they are the head of this huge beast. Like, any feature film is just a huge beast, and so many people and so much money involved, even with small budget. And there's one person at the very top of the chain, and it's just strange, like, how they sort of fall into it, because it seems like Kevin Smith sort of fell into it, because he basically funded his own first film, Clerks, $22,000. and then just kind of went on from there. But he never had, at that point, worked in a studio or worked on a film, so he didn't really know the structure of what an actual on-set director does. It's interesting. But anyway, Red's it. Good film. Watch it.
Okay. My recommendation is Moneyball. It's once again, like, when I was in Spain, I just caught the end of it. Also watched World War Z, so I had a wee Brad Pitt time in Spain.
He needs all the help he can get at the moment. Like, he's going through a rough time. So
going through a divorce. But, I caught the end of Moneyball, and I really enjoyed the film when I first seen it, and I have it on Blu-ray and stuff. But I hadn't watched it since it came out, pretty much, and just catching it, I was like, Jesus, a really good fucking film.
Barry Bean.
And I think it's one of Brad Pitt's best performances as well. Like, just, it's so natural, and just the whole film, it just feels like this really, well, because it is a true story, like.
But, you know Moneyball again, Bennett Miller, is it? The Don Capote? I'll check.
That's it's Bennett Miller. It's an Aaron Sorkin script, and Bennett Miller.
Don't we know? What was that line you told me? It was fucking a great line about Aaron Sorkin. That at least I don't have to do.
Oh, about Newsroom?
So good.
It was a comedian, I can't even remember what comedian said it, but they were talking about the show Newsroom. It's like, oh, no, it's great to hear Aaron Sorkin's opinion on news without having to do coke with him. But yeah, Moneyball, it's Brad Pitt. What's the character's name again?
Barry Bean.
Barry Bean.
Yeah, it's the actual man's name too.
Yeah. And I know he's a baseball coach, and it's just Jonah Hill's character comes in with just this theory that someone else came up with, and it's like it's a different way of choosing players, and I don't want to explain the whole film, but it's really good. And it's really natural and just feels really
Barry Bean.
But just the thing always sticks out to me in that film as well is his daughter in it, and she's not even in it that much, but just the wee song she sings for him and stuff, and then at the very end you have that again once everything's happened, what's happened and stuff, and there's some really powerful bits at the end of it, just once they've done everything and it's turned out the way it's turned out.
There's a great scene that always stood out to me in Moneyball, and what I love about Pitt's performance is it's the most unshowy performance that you'll watch,
because
it's so stripped down, and because it's so stripped down he actually really seems like a real person who's just under a lot of pressure with his team. But it's the scene in The Cure when his team is playing but he's not at the match, you know what I mean, but you can just see the tension when he's listening to the radio. And I always like that most of the times he doesn't watch them play. Because you know that part where he's standing in the locker room and he can hear the crowd in the stadium, but he's not actually, but he knows from the crowd's reaction that they're doing well. Just wee bits of gut. It's sweet.
I know, because even the last match that you actually see, and the last head of it, you see Brad Pitt in the locker room, and he's kind of in the same pose for ages, and then you hear the whack of the ball, and you just see his head turn, like, and he's all in silhouette, and it's class looking, like.
Yeah.
It's Chris Pratt in there as well.
Yeah, yep. He is.
He's the boy. And Phil Seymour Hoffman as well.
That's right. That's a really small role for him, though. It's almost like, it's kind of weird that they even cast him, because for such a big actor, he doesn't really have to do much, like, you know what I mean?
Well, he's the coach of the team, is it?
He's the coach of the team, and I think.
And then Brad Pitt's the manager.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a great, just small stakes film, like, and it's just a great drama, and just one of Brad Pitt's best performances, and it's really engaging, and Jonah Hill as well.
Got nominated for an Oscar for it.
When you first kind of see him do like proper drama stuff, even though he's still a bit comedic in it, and there's still that kind of levity to him. But it's great. I really love it.
No, you talking about it? I think I'm going to rewatch, because it's on Netflix, too, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just been added to Netflix. Yeah.
So I might give it another watch. I haven't watched it in quite a while.
I know, neither have I. That's why, I'm kind of talking about the ending bits, because I've seen those again recently. But
I might be on a Sunday watch for tomorrow when I'm hanging out my hole.
It's a great film.
Call him Hearn.
We recommend a film called The Stalking Moon. I watched it recently. It's Gregory Peck and Robert Foster.
Yep.
It was directed by a guy called Robert Mulligan, who I haven't really seen any of his other films, but it was
produced. Did he do one before, but it was really shite, but they gave him another chance?
I don't know.
I'm Mulligan.
Was this an old TCM one, was it? Seems like a bit of TCM one.
What does TCM stand for?
Turner Classic Movies.
Yeah. I think I was asking Hearn.
Sorry.
But no, it's a black and white western where Gregory Peck is like an army scout who sort of he would arrest Apaches and things like this here.
Yeah, Apaches.
And it sort of starts off when they're just sort of raiding this Indian camp and and then I think that was his last sort of job with the scouts and stuff, and so he is retiring to New Mexico, but he takes pity on this woman and her son who's a half breed, but it's this half breed of this assassin, Native American, who they didn't catch in that raid, and so the whole thing is that this guy will eventually come after them, kind of thing. And it's very simple. I mean, it's comparable to something like Jeremiah Johnson or something like that there. Yeah. But it's very, very good, and Gregory Peck's just fucking solid. Like, he's great, and it's a very simple, stripped down western, but it's very well directed, very simple. I would just recommend it. Definitely.
Boom. I like it. It's a sort of off the beaten track one too, which I like. Nice one.
What'd you call it again?
The Stalking Moon.
The Stalking Moon.
That's it.
Boom. Get on it. TCM.
Awesome. I just watch TCM until it comes on.
It'll come on eventually.
Okay, we'll wrap it up there, folks. Thank you so much for listening. Let us know what your favorite Moon film is.
Or your favorite TCM film.
Oh, that's a good one. TCM. Watch TCM and tell us what film you liked. No, that doesn't make sense.
It does.
Doesn't?
Aye.
But you have to watch TCM then.
It doesn't matter. They're still watching films. They give us feedback.
Oh, God.
Oh, golly.
Come on.
Just tell us what films you like. You can find us on Facebook, Let's Talk More Movies Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Talk More Movies, or you can email us letstalkmoremovies@gmail.com. I haven't done this in 3 weeks. It's very difficult.
You're doing well.
You can leave us comments or reviews on iTunes, Acast, or whatever podcast service you like. I've been your host, Michael Breslin. Sean Cole's been Sean Cole.
Yay.
Calum Harris from Calum Harris. Episode
69, baby.
69.
Let's not be 16.
Because we're 69. Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.
Benny's fancy watching the last 5 minutes of Whatless now.
Let's just watch it right now.
Fuck off.
She didn't be talking.
Eh? No, because it's silent.
She's really brave. Really brave director.
So brave.
He's so brave to make this choice.
Did you actually feel like a proper dick when you realised it?
As soon as I realised that I rolled over in a remote, I was like, I'm a fucking absolute goose.
But did you realise because you were so into it, it's like...
Oh, you know, I was kind of disappointed with myself.
Yeah, come on, Peter, actually, you get it on that?
There's actually a part of me that kind of wishes that I'd never realised I'd rolled over in that remote. Just kind of believed the lie.
You don't find out until you meet Peter Weir. Is he alive?
Ah, yes.
Okay, that's right.
Hey, just Peter Weir now.
That joke makes sense. that's a solid joke now.
What the fuck is here?
Is he not making films anymore?
Yeah,
is
he? He just expects gaps. He must be up in his 70s too, like, so he's probably just fucking
chilling. What was his last film?
Having a few cans.
Was that one, The Way Back, with Ed Harris and Colin Farrell?
What do you call that fucking boy? Northern
Jim
Irish
Sturgis.
Guy? Jim Sturgis.
He's English.
Is he? Jim? Yeah. Oh, no, it's just I'm 50 Dead Men Walking. What a piece of shit that was.
Is that shit?
I don't mind that.
Shit. He's at 72.
Anything on coming up?
We'll see now.
Slowest IMDb.
Fuck it on the year 11 dangerously too.
Oh fuck
it. I know we're big fans. Like, did you drop one there now? I heard a wee tits comedy.
That was a wee verb.
That sounded like an internal one though. Like your stomach.
And he's on Green Card. Fucking hell.
He's doing a sequel to that.
No, fuck all. Fucking wish. I should direct that one. About myself, just.
Not in the pipeline.
Last film was 6 years ago. I'm on his, Wikipedia. IMDb will fucking tell me more.
Christ, you're the worst.
Amateur over here.
The worst.
In the world.
You watch that show, You're the Worst, don't you?
It's really good. You'd fucking love it. You'd be all that shit. Shit. Nominated for 6 Oscars though, fucker.
That bastard.
One for every decade.
No, absolutely nothing. He must be just fucking biting that pipe himself, just and chilling out for a while. Done the Mosquito Coast too.
Well done, Peter Weir.
Fucking right. He also done The Cars That Eat People back in 1974. It was definitely a money job. Like,
alright, I'm trying to end the fucking podcast and you keep talking.
Are we not done? Do you not stop?
No.
What the fuck are you up to?
Well,
you've got loads of places to call on now, like.
When?
That one fucking. Hey, you know you.
Should I press stop now?
Press up.